Thanks heaps for listening to my podcast from the internet. I really appreciate it. If you want to tweet it out to a friend, that would be great, or share it on Facebook, or click on the review button on iTunes. That would be really cool. Thank you very much. Now, if you spend a lot of time online, and if you've stumbled across this podcast, I'm guessing you have, you've probably come across the words of Ben Pobje. He is a great writer, a very funny tweeter, and he's been able to turn those things into a full-time job, which is the dream for a lot of people, I guess, juxtaposed to a lot of us who are sort of like day job slash wannabe blogger slash casual tweeter. He now does these things full-time, which is pretty awesome. He didn't always do that, though, and we'll talk about that in this podcast, but I started by asking him, as I've asked all the other guests on this, when you're asked, "So what do you do for a living?" How do you answer?
I generally say I'm a writer because that kind of covers everything. I just say I'm a writer because currently that is my main job. I earn most of my money writing columns. But then, of course, when you say that, people say, "What do you write?" And I kind of want to go into detail about every single thing that I happen to do.
Well, that's why I ask you that question, because I guess for yourself, it's not a clear cut answer as it would be for some people.
Well, no, I mean, I have what I call my day job right now, and I write TV reviews, and that's my main source of income. But I'm also, you know, I'm writing columns for other people. I'm working on books. I'm writing scripts. I'm performing as well. I'm doing comedy, and podcasting and all sorts of things. So I'm a writer and a comedian.
Yep.
But I'll be honest. I sometimes feel like a bit of a fraud telling people I'm a comedian because it's not. Because I'm not a full-time professional.
Yeah, well, I've done a little bit of stand-up and stuff, and then I can tell a few jokes on the radio, but sometimes I get introduced to people as a comedian. I'm always like, oh, no, I don't know if that I feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, I would love to be able to say that, I just feel like I'm big-noting myself more than I deserve.
Yeah, right.
Because, I am a comedian. I do comedy, so it's an accurate description, but if you were to say, who is Ben, you wouldn't say he's a comedian, because that's probably not an adequate first answer. So I say I'm a writer, it covers a lot of different things that I do.
Well, a lot of people that as sort of this sort of slash comedian would have a day job. Does it help that your day job per se is still in media and entertainment rather than having another type of day job per se?
And that's something that I've only had since last year. So before that I had, you know, a regular office job and tried to fit everything I wanted to do around that.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier when you have a full-time job that you do from home and you can set your own hours.
I was just about to say, is your, like you said, the day job is writing the articles and stuff about TV. You don't go into work, into Fairfax and sit at the desk and pump them out. You just do at home.
No, it's fantastic. I can sit on my couch in my pajamas. It's wonderful. That's the dream part of it, really.
And you still, and even though you say like it is a day job, but like you obviously still enjoy that and you have a really good time doing it.
Yeah, I really do. And that's the great thing, is that I can earn, you know, a decent amount of money doing something that is fun. You know, and it's not a grind, if you know what I mean.
Is it a grind happening? Because I know for me doing breakfast radio, sometimes I'm forced to pay attention to TV shows that I wouldn't necessarily pay attention to. Does that, A, annoy you, or B, is it one of the... Because I often remind myself, I go, oh, but Ryan, come on. If this is the hardest part of your job, then it's not that bad.
Oh, yeah, you do have to check yourself sometimes. Sometimes you're like, oh, God, not again. And you're like, hang on, this is such a brilliant thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
But sometimes you sort of look through the TV timetable and say, okay, what am I gonna review on this day? And you look through and it's like, there's just nothing here. This is all such rubbish.
Because you write for Fairfax and it's kind of a broad publication, does that mean you have to stick to the broader TV shows, or you kind of get free rein, or?
No, I get fairly free rein. I have to do, I'm still on mostly like the free to air shows, sort of the old style TV guide.
Yep.
So I don't do a lot of pay TV, but I pretty much I can basically choose what I what to write on whatever I want.
Yeah. And do you get much, like you said, you get to choose your shows, but do you get much feedback, or you just write it and you send it through the email and then that gets published, or?
I get occasional feedback. It is pretty much like that most of the time. I send it in and it gets published.
Yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Obviously, you've done different kinds of writing for years and years and years, but is it sometimes nice to get an editor saying good job or more of that or that was funny? Or
yeah, it's nice to hear from time to time.
What if it's not good?
Or if, if it's not good, you never like to hear that.
Yeah.
But that's a learning thing. The other good thing, the good thing about TV reviews is that they're just TV reviews. And so there's not a lot of room for me to be saying something incredibly controversial and have the editor call me up and say I need to make a public apology or anything.
Yeah, right. So yeah. Yeah.
It's fairly safe in that sense. And look, they mostly just go through and I've learnt, I guess I have the experience behind me that I know what is good and what isn't, or what is acceptable and what isn't.
Yep.
And you know, the people at the other end know what I'm like, and as long as I keep on doing what comes naturally to me, really.
Yeah.
I know I'll pretty much be right, because that's what I got hired for.
Yeah, and it makes a big difference if you're hired to be you, juxtaposed to being hired to write on this and being a writer for the newspaper per se, because it'd be very different.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact is, they came to me, about a year and a half ago and said, we want you to take over the daily TV column. And before that, they came to me and said, we want you to do the Saturday TV column. And in both of those cases, it was like they wanted me for what I do.
For you,
all I had to do was sit down and do what I do.
That's often a big problem for people, because I work in regional radio, is that people get hired and then they go, oh, yeah, well, you're really great. And then they get to the new job and they go, okay, now this is what you need to do, and your opinion needs to be this, and you need to be firm on that, but not on this, and blah, blah. And you're like, well, hang on a sec, mate. I don't quite know that's how I thought this was going to be. Tell me a little bit about, because I had a similar thing. I have an honours degree in finance and used to work as an accountant. Tell me about like the last day at your day job, or when you quit, like just the feeling of going, yep, I'm actually get to write full time now instead of just on the side.
It really was kind of euphoric, because I had a day job, and it wasn't a terrible job, but I'd been in it for a long time, and it had started to really grind me down.
Yeah.
I was sick of it, and I was quite unhappy at the workplace I was at. And so being able to do that, it was a funny thing. Like, first of all, there's just the euphoria of saying, yes, this is, I finally hit one of the major goals. Because, you think about, As you set out on a career as a writer, you think about certain goals you want to achieve, and one of them is definitely, being able to just be a writer as your job.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty big thing. I was celebrating, but fairly quickly, of course, when your writing is your job, fairly quickly you settle down into it and it becomes your day-to-day thing. And every now and then I have to stop myself and remind myself, kind of like you said before, remind myself that this is actually quite a special thing that I get to do.
Yeah. Were you nervous at all, or was it genuine excitement? Because I know when I left my high-paying finance job, I was like, oh, God, how am I ever going to be able to afford anything again?
I guess I'm lucky that I didn't have a very high-paying job.
Mine wasn't that high-paying. It was just more than I did in my first radio job.
No, it was... Well, I did get lucky. I mean, I've got a young family. I've got three kids. And
that makes it significantly different.
I could never consider sort of that big artistic step of, oh, I'm going to quit my job and just go out on a limb sort of thing. I'd sort of had to wait until I had a solid gig, a regular source of income waiting. And so I did. And so I got the offer of the TV column, which I knew would sort of fulfill my needs at least as much as the old office job did.
Do you have to force yourself sometimes to, I guess it could be easy to fall into the habit of just writing the TV review and then just doing nothing on the couch? Do you have to kind of force yourself to keep doing that other stuff and prepping comedy material and stuff like that?
And that's that's a constant renewal thing. Like, it's at the beginning, you can fall into the trap of believing that you can sort of make a single decision, like a New Year's resolution, and yeah. say, right, from now on, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to knuckle down to it. I'm going to do what I split my work into the things I have to do and the things I want to do.
Okay.
And the things I have to do are the things that someone's waiting on, and the things I want to do are the things that I'm hoping will progress my career in some way
yeah.
or fulfill a passion of mine or whatever. And so once I've done the things I have to do, of course, it's an effort of will and discipline to do the things you want to do, to actually be the writer or the artist that you want to be. You have to work at that.
Yeah.
And you sort of, at the beginning, you think, okay, I'm just going to say to myself, this is what I will do from now on. I will do this. I will stick to a schedule. I'll make sure I do all it. But you can't just make that decision once, you know.
Yeah.
Every few weeks you have to reaffirm it to yourself, because you slip out of it so easily because life comes at you, you know.
Yeah.
Things have to be done. Your schedule gets messed up. You know, the kids come to you wanting you to do stuff. You've got appointments and family rubbish, and you get sick and all kinds of things. They mess you up, and then you sort of get to, and then you sort of say, oh God, I'm going to relax today.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but then
you're
relaxing for 3 days in a row.
Yeah.
it's like, as I say, there's the things you have to do, and there's never any problem getting them done because you know you have to do them. But it's the stuff where you know who you want to be and you know what you want to do. You've got to resist the temptation to just drift along doing only what you have to do.
Yeah.
If you want to actually keep building your career, because there's so much I want to achieve, like any, you know, creative person.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much I want to achieve, and I don't want to look back and think I never really properly had a crack at it.
Yeah.
You've got to remind yourself of that in the moment when, your brain and your body is telling you that you just want to slob out on the couch.
Yeah, well, I have that as well because I get up really early to do breakfast radio. It is quite easy in the afternoon to just go to bed.
Yeah, absolutely. Hell, it's easy for me in the afternoon to go to bed, even if I only woke up half an hour ago. You know, and that's exactly right. And of course, that's perfectly natural.
Yeah.
And it's not that there's anything that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that it's a matter of what you want to do and what you want out of your own career. You know, it's like if I decided, well, I'm just going to write the TV reviews and for the rest of the time I'll be a man of leisure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there'd be nothing wrong with me doing that from any external point of view.
Yeah, but if you know that you want more than that,
yeah,
then it's up to you to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Me and myself, as much as I love writing the TV reviews, but that is not all that I want to do.
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar boat where even just like life in general, I don't have to be the best, but I would want to think that I did my best. And I hate to, like you said, look back and go, oh, geez, I was actually quite lazy and I wish I had done more.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that would
exactly.
annoy
and
me to no
that's
end.
That's the worst thing. And yeah. those are the regrets that you have. I mean, I have them about things in the past where I think I could have had a more exciting experience if I'd pushed myself a bit more. And you've got to keep reminding yourself of that.
Although, how awesome is the term "I'm a man of leisure"? I just love saying
wonderful.
That more than
it's
nothing
wonderful.
Else.
And I'd love to be a man of leisure. But yeah. I'd love to be a man of leisure after becoming
yeah.
you know, fabulously rich and famous.
Yeah. Now, looking at like all good podcast creators, I did an extensive Wikipedia search of your name, and I.
Can't have been that extensive
for all paragraph
of
it. Look, the two paragraphs on your name, I read both of them, and I'll have you know that's two more paragraphs than me and most people I know. But I see books, I see comedy festival shows, writing for the ABC, New Matilda, obviously the Fairfax websites and newspapers and stuff like that. It seems you've created heaps of content, and from the outside, like just looking at that, I would go, mate, this guy's killing it. Like, do you feel like you're killing it, or do you feel like you said you've only just started doing it full time?
I vary. Some days I really do feel like I'm killing it.
Yeah.
And that's the days probably when I happen to have actually achieved a lot in that particular day.
Yeah, what does that mean for you? Just stop there quickly. Like, for you to be killing it on one day, is that because your article got heaps of retweets or because you achieved lots of getting actual writing done during the day? Like, what represents a killing it day for you?
It could be both of those things. It could be, you know, some days I'm like, hey, I've written 5 articles today. I'm doing really well.
Yep.
But it's also, you know, when you write something and it gets, as you say, gets a lot of retweets, gets a lot of reaction.
Feels nice.
On social media, I'm like, well, I'm out there.
Yeah.
When I'm asked to do things, like when people come to me and I feel like I'm in demand.
Yeah.
That's a great feeling. But on the other hand, it's like you say, it's like you look at it and I've got books and comedy festival shows, but I look at people who have books that actually sell a lot of copies, comedy festival shows that a lot of people come to, and I'm like, well, I'm not where I want to be, you know. I've got a certain amount of success in some areas, but in terms of my own ambitions, I've got so much further to go. What I don't want to do, I am prone to getting too negative about it and thinking I'm too far away from it. And when you feel, I think there's like 3 states. There's a feeling, as you say, I'm killing it, I'm doing really well.
Yeah.
There's a feeling of, I've got a lot more, I've got a long way to go and I've got to keep working at it. The worst feeling is feeling, you know what, I'm just failing at so many things. Because that doesn't, you get down on yourself, you don't really feel pushed to do more, you feel like giving up. Because you feel, there's no point doing comedy anymore. People aren't, I'm not selling out comedy festival shows. I should just quit.
And that, like, you just have days when it feels like that, or you just...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then how do you get yourself out of that? Or you just, is that one of those things where you remind yourself, well, hang on a second, I am writing for a full-time job.
I'm
the potential to be a man of leisure, and you come around. Because I think everyone probably in most professions has, you know, their ups and down days.
I always say the base reason to be a writer and artist, to create things at all, is that you feel there is something that you have to say or something that you have to put into the world that the world would be missing out if you didn't. Because you can do it for money or attention or whatever, but there'll be times when the money's not coming in, there'll be times when you're not succeeding.
Yep.
And so you need something to drive you to push forward. And what that is for me is just the feeling that I've got a lot of work in me and I want that to be seen by the world.
Yep.
And I think it would be a shame for me and for the world to miss out on all that. I just got to remind myself, hey, if I give up, all this great stuff that I've got in my head and in my notebooks and on my computer, that's never going to be seen.
Have you heard of the book called Die Empty?
Sorry, what was that one?
There's a book called Die Empty.
Die Empty?
Yeah. Have you heard of it?
I haven't heard of it, but I already like the idea.
Yeah, I'll send you a link. And that's the idea, is that by the time you die, you will have given every piece of ounce of content. And it's mainly based for writers, but it can be used for, I guess, all kind of creative types. But it's about how to get it all out. There's
absolutely
no point dying with some cool ideas still inside of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, not to get all motivational speakery, but for example, when I do if I go out and do a comedy gig and it's to, you know, 5 people in a tiny little room,
yeah,
sometimes maybe I will go, or if I give a gig to 100 people and none of them laugh, even worse.
Yeah, well, what is worse?
I can go home, you know, I might go home and feel really depressed and think, what is the point? I don't know why I'm doing this. I should just give, my life would be easier if I gave up. But I always come back to the point that I say, no, I've got ideas.
Yeah.
I don't want to be spending my whole life just sitting with all these ideas and doing nothing with them. I have to do something with them, or else I will be more unhappy than I am now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what you got to remind yourself of, how you feel when you're not doing anything.
Yeah, I have to write dot points on notes to myself in like different moods, and then like read them when I need to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I say, there's no moment of epiphany that is going to drive you on for the whole of your life, I don't think. You've got to keep...
Really? Because every time I go to an airport and I go into the book section and flick open some, you know, Dalai Lama book, and I'm hoping I land on one page that I go, oh, that's the quote that will keep me going for the next 30 years.
Oh, that's the thing. It's like, you can find that quote, but you're going to have to keep... You're going to have to read that quote, you know, over and over again. You're going to have to keep reminding yourself of why that quote means something to you.
Let's talk about a little bit about your, like, using Twitter and stuff for a little bit.
Yeah.
I think at the moment you've got about 14, 15,000 followers.
About
and
that.
You seem to be kind of tweeting gags sort of based on the news cycle every day. Do you set aside time when you say, like, you've got a bunch of stuff to do on any given day? Do you set aside time and go, all right, I'm going to read the news and tweet some stuff right now? Or is it because you're constantly on your computer or on your phone that just as they come to mind, you just throw them out?
Yes, it's the latter.
Yeah.
No, I'm never organized enough to actually set aside time, unless I'm setting aside time to, you know, watch a TV show that I specifically want to live tweet.
Yeah.
No, it really is. It's just I'm there, I'm online, and I think of things. And sometimes I think to myself, today I'm not going to tweet, and then something catches my eye in the news, and I tweet a joke about it, and then I remember I'd promised myself I wasn't going to tweet, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Obviously, like, you're a great writer, but do you think the fact that you've got 14, 15,000 followers makes it easier for someone like Fairfax to justify hiring you?
Absolutely.
Irrelevant of your writing skills?
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, totally. It was tweeting that got me my first Fairfax column in the first place.
Okay. Was there anything in particular that they said they liked or didn't like, or was it just the sheer volume of people engaging in it?
Because I was tweeting about TV.
Yep.
And at that time, I had especially gone absolutely mad on MasterChef. and I'd gained about, you know, I'd kind of quadrupled my Twitter followers just on the basis of MasterChef tweets.
Far out.
And so it was sort of... Yeah, I was already writing columns as well, so they were able to look at those and say, okay, this guy can write a column.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the fact that I was tweeting, I was being funny about TV and enthusiastic about TV as a medium, not just heaping shit on it and saying everything sucks.
Yeah. Is that important?
It was important. I was...
When you say, because I guess it could be easy just to rag on everything and you'll find some people that agree, but is it important to be able to still like stuff as well?
It really is. I think it is. I mean, I have read, and I still read occasionally, TV reviewers who just, they don't like TV. And I don't just mean they don't like a lot of shows. They... really do, you know, they put across a sense of this medium is beneath me.
Yep.
You know, and they'll single out, you know, the very, very elite shows and say, oh, I love this show because, oh, it's not like all that other crap. But I hope I put across the impression that even though I'm saying absolutely a lot of these shows are crap, but TV is still fun.
Yeah.
And even when it's crap, it's fun. And even when it's crap, I like it, you know?
Yeah.
And I have a love of TV. And that not only makes, I think, it more fun to read, more entertaining, it makes me a little bit more credible as a judge of TV shows, because I hope the reader reads my reviews knowing that I'm not going in with my nose in the air.
Yeah, well, I reckon you could read a few negative posts or articles and think it was funny, but could you, as a reader, go back every day for years just knowing that they're going to say it's crap anyway? Like, you'd get bored of it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Now, just in terms of you having your opinions, not just on TV, but I guess in general, I like that you have them and, like, you stand by them and you back yourself. I reckon there's nothing more boring and in radio when someone just has nothing to say. Now, many people, including me, have got into little Twitter debates with you over certain topics and stuff like that.
Oh, God, I don't even remember. Sorry.
Oh, well, I assume I'm one of many.
But when I say I don't remember, it's not because I have millions of arguments. I honestly tend to forget things I've put on Twitter very quickly.
Yeah, same. And it's really dangerous because sometimes stuff happens and someone goes, oh, you tweeted about that once, Ryan. And I go, shit, did I? I was going to say, do you think having being over opinion, do you reckon that could ever, obviously it helps get you work and that's your job, but do you think it could ever cost you getting work?
Oh, it definitely could.
Yeah. And has it?
I don't think it has yet. I can't be sure. There might be people who've decided they're not going to hire me.
Yeah.
And I mean, well, there probably are, because there are people who I've quite clearly made clear that I do not care for them.
Yeah.
And they will probably not want to work with me in the future. But I haven't as yet, although I've been in some controversies where people have called for me to lose my job, I haven't as yet had an editor who has actually believed I deserve to lose my job for something I said on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which is lucky, because I don't think I've ever been terrible on Twitter. I mean, I have opinions and I do jokes, and you know, sometimes if you tell a lot of jokes, occasionally a joke might offend someone, and that's
no one knows more than that more than me and my content director, believe me.
Yeah.
So, if I tell enough jokes, some of them are going to stick the wrong way.
Yeah, and it's like, the thing is I'm not someone who enjoys confrontation.
Yeah.
And I actually often I avoid putting my opinion out there on social media because I know it's going to spark a fight, but sometimes I just can't help myself.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm always like, no
strength in a way.
It's like there's someone sitting there going, Ryan, you know no good will come from this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I just go, nah, I just can't not say anything about this
exactly.
Right now.
It's like, I know what they're going to say, but I just want to put this out there. But I think a lot of people take opinions more seriously than I do, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Not that I don't take my own opinion seriously. If I think something, I really do think it. But if someone disagrees with me, I'm not necessarily going to say this is a bad person. I want nothing more to do with them.
Yeah.
Some people do. I guess everyone, I guess, has a line, you know, a threshold where certain opinions they believe cannot be held by a decent person.
Yeah. Would you ever change?
My line is fairly lenient.
Yeah. Would you ever change your opinion if you had a really good punchline to suit it?
I wouldn't change my opinion, but I might say that I did.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, God, I'd rather be funny than, you know, anything really.
Yeah, yeah.
As much as it's great to have to write a serious article or even a satirical article, and people saying, "Oh God, he's so right, go Ben," I'd still rather
them laugh.
You know, if I could write something that was making everyone laugh, that'd still be more awesome for me.
Yeah.
But as I say, I just can't help myself having an opinion sometimes.
A recent article you wrote for Junkie, they then either took it down or didn't publish it, and you actually put it on your own blog and said, oh, Junkie took this down, but anyway, here it is on my own blog.
Yeah.
Would they be pissed that you said that?
I don't know. They might be. I hope they're not. I didn't say anything except what happened. I mean,
yeah.
Look, I wanted to put it up because it was up and it was taken down, and I tweeted links to it, and it was taken down fairly quickly, and people who clicked on the links after it was taken down,
like, were
naturally saying, how come this isn't here?
Yeah.
And furthermore, I was quite proud of the article and I wanted people to read it. But also people who had seen it on Junkie, if they saw it on my blog, would be saying, why is he putting this on his blog?
Yeah.
So I just, that's the explanation. It was published, they took it down, and here it is.
I'd be the same with, often I like stuff that's a bit more, I can't be offended by anything. So when someone say, oh, do you think this is offensive, Ryan? Don't even bother asking, because I'll never say yes, which is actually really bad, because when I'm posting on my radio station account, then I have to think, does this put the radio station in the light they want to be seen at?
You've got to say, I'm not offended. You've got to sort of say, can I think of someone who would be offended by this?
Yeah, but so the reason for me asking about this Junkie thing is often I am told, oh, Ryan, you can't put that on the show or you can't put that on our website. And I'll go, oh, okay, no worries, and I'll just put it on my own one.
Yeah.
Because I'm still like at the stubbornness of like, people must see this. This is too good. And if I can't show them this way, I'll show them that way. But I don't think I would ever write, and I guess maybe it's different because I work in the same building and I meet with them every day, but I'd never write, my boss said I couldn't post this, so fuck them, here it is on my own one. I would just post it and say, here's the thing I found.
Oh, sure. But I'm not making a claim like I've been censored or anything.
Yeah.
It just, I'm honestly just baldly stating the facts, is that that is what happened. And I happen to disagree that they should have taken it down, because obviously I think it's good. That's why I put it up again.
Yep.
I don't think that those who were offended by it were making a good argument for their point of view. So I disagree with them. But obviously, I mean, it's their website. They can take it down.
Yeah.
I'm not launching a protest campaign or anything. Junkie are fine. Junkie are great.
Yeah, cool.
But, you know, I like the article, and it's still my article. So
yep.
I thought, hey, it's down. I wrote it. I don't want to have written it for nothing in terms of it just disappearing and not exist as if it never existed.
Yeah.
I want it to exist out there, so.
Yeah. Well, just on that topic, and like I said, you writing for the Fairfax websites, Junkie, and there's a few other places you write for as well. Is it a whole new ball game, or do you get enough traffic to eventually go, you know what, I don't want to write for anyone else. I'm just going to write for benpobg.com and sell my own ads. And is that viable, or like...
I'll be honest, I have no idea if that's viable.
Yeah.
certainly my blog doesn't get traffic, but then I don't write that often for my blog because I'm writing for everyone else.
Yeah.
So if I made a concerted effort, I don't even know how the whole selling ads things worked.
Yeah, and that's the tricky thing is, like, if you're really good at writing, you shouldn't be, like, people who sell ads. You're not an ad salesman. Like,
exactly.
It'd take a lot of time just running the business and not actually doing what you're doing. You've just never really even thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally I think of, I wonder if I could monetize this on my own. But it's a hassle.
Yeah.
I'm reasonably happy working for other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, occasionally I do a podcast with a friend of mine. Sometimes we do videos. I do my blog. And, you know, if something like that catches fire, then sure, I might pursue it. But I'm as you say, I'm fairly happy leaving the ad selling business to
the ad salesman. Yeah. Now, this podcast is about people that do stuff on the internet, and most of this stuff is, like I said, being posted online and all the writing that you do.
Yeah.
It feels like the whole of the internet is for the legalization of same-sex marriage. Now, Tony Abbott doesn't care what the people on the internet think. Is the internet as powerful as we think it is? Or is it Tony Abbott that's the idiot? And I guess that's always the easiest punchline to use.
Tony Abbott is definitely an idiot. It is...
Because I listen to a lot of podcasts and read a lot of articles. I'm fascinated by digital media, and you go, oh, this is the future, and it's this, and it's that. And then, you, like I said, you see that the whole internet's for something, and the government's like, oh, I don't really think so.
It is powerful, but maybe not necessarily in the ways that people assume it is.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people with sort of online petitions and things think that the internet is powerful in the sense that if a bunch of people on the internet say something, they must change other it must change other people's minds.
Yeah.
It's not really, it's powerful in the sense of connecting people and communication so that people, well, for instance, before the internet, if same-sex marriage came up, you wouldn't really have any idea who was
for or against
same-sex marriage,
yeah,
apart from, you know, a few dozen people who write for newspapers and politicians themselves.
Yeah.
Now you can actually say that, and it's like Tony Abbott. He has the power to say no.
Yeah.
He's still against it, and it's fine. But it's out there now, and he can't escape the fact that millions of people are against him.
Yeah.
So it's powerful in that sense, but it's not powerful in a direct sense that, hey, the internet can get together and just storm the walls and bring everything down.
Yeah.
But it is powerful.
A lot of people think that, though.
Yeah, it doesn't really work, but it can bring people together. It can help people communicate. It can help facilitate and make easier real action.
Yeah.
But internet action by itself, it's just, well, I mean, it's like writing letters in the old days, really.
I'm going to write a letter.
The internet's a communication tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's still people. saying and doing things, and it's still down to what the people think and what the people do.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Now, I won't ask about your like personal finances, but I should just say that as a sentence. But I want to know your thoughts on like online contributors and how people should or could be paid, because obviously some websites pay people with money, but a lot are still paying with exposure and potential opportunity and all that sort of thing. Do you have, like, as someone who now makes a living as an online contributor, do you have thoughts on that kind of issue?
I think every outlet should pay its contributors as much, you know, heaps, but I know that some can't.
Yeah.
That's a fact. And I know that there are some that can but choose not to. That's a fact as well.
Yeah.
Look, most of the time, if a site is offering to pay you an exposure, it's probably not a big enough site to give you exposure that's worth working for anyway.
Yeah, right.
So you've got to remember that. But also, just be aware of what's going on. If people know what the deal is before they start writing for a place, if they think, yeah, this experience is going to be worthwhile for me, then they can do it. I'm not like railing against places that don't pay or pay very little.
Yeah.
I rail against places that try and trick people into thinking they're getting paid and then don't pay them.
Yeah, I guess that's two very different things, like you say, because I know when I started doing some media stuff, I interned and did work experience for free for a few newspapers and websites and stuff. Mm. And some of my friends, and this is when I had a degree in finance and was earning money elsewhere, they're like, you're an idiot. Like, why? You should be getting paid. And I said to them, well, look, if the choice was do it for free or don't do it at all, I'd rather do it for free. And I guess a lot of employers will use that argument whether they can actually afford it or not. I feel like the ones I did it with generally couldn't, like wouldn't have paid.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what I'm in favour of is just writers, contributors always knowing exactly what the deal is before they start contributing.
Yeah.
And contributors having the confidence to say yes or no genuinely based on what they want to do and not being, you know, scared into thinking they have to do anything they can or whatever. So I just say, you know, never write for a media outlet that doesn't pay you unless you want to.
So
it's just like that. It's like I don't like it when a big organisation that, you know, can afford to pay its contributors doesn't.
Yeah.
But if people still want to, then let them go for it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to pick at them or anything over it.
Yeah. All right. I've got two more questions for you, Ben. If you could tell 18-year-old Ben anything or something about writing and how the internet might change the opportunities and potential for writers to earn income and to make a career for themselves, what would you advise your younger self?
I would just advise my younger self at 18, I would say sit down and start writing as much as you can right now, because in 10 years you're going to finally realize that you can really do it.
Yeah. And is that in terms of
get started now and you've got a much better chance?
Yeah. Is that sort of back to the question from before, was that an exposure thing or more of an experience thing? And like, do you believe in that kind of 10,000 hours to be a master or something kind of theory?
A bit of both. Yep. Bit of both. I mean, you know, you go back and you say, I would say to myself, look, the internet's starting up, there's going to be a lot of chances. But also, look, you know you want to be a writer, but you're not really knuckling down at the moment. You're floating about.
Yeah.
I'd say just write as much as you can, because I did a professional writing course at TAFE when I was 22.
Yeah.
And what I realized is the best way to learn to be a writer is just to be forced into writing. Because when you do a writing course, you have to write.
As someone who has looked at courses like that and then gone, but what are they actually going to teach you? Would you advise just to start and for other people just to start writing, or are those courses great?
Those courses are great because they put you in a position where you have to.
Yeah.
Have to do it. You know, you're not necessarily, depending on the teachers, you may gain some wonderful insights or you may not, but the one thing you're going to do is you're going to end up doing a lot of writing and you're going to learn things about yourself.
Yeah.
From that.
Yeah, cool. And final question is, You were saying before that you've, like we're sort of six months into being a full-time writer and not having that day job, and you still feel like you are sort of starting out a bit in comedy and or whatnot and in different different levels. What would the dream end goal kind of be for you? Because I know everyone's is different.
The absolute dream end goal?
Yeah.
Books on bestseller list, creating my own TV show.
Oh, when you say, and what, like TV, what kind of TV?
Comedy.
Yep.
TV show.
Like based on your stand-up stuff or like sketches or...
Well, you know what?
I'll just take the TV
it's
show.
It's always everything. You know, that's the thing. Yeah. I sort of, you talk about my absolute, my ultimate dream.
Yep.
My ultimate dream is to pretty much conquer every corner of entertainment. So.
Oh, well, don't dream too big.
Hey. It'll make sure that I pretty much never stop trying, because I'll never actually reach a point where I say, yep, I've done it.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I'm like that as well. And that it's kind of when you said, oh, one of my main goals was to write full time. And now you're doing it and you still feel like, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You will be one of those people that never finished, if so to speak.
I probably will.
Yeah.
You know, I think the more you achieve, the more satisfied you feel.
Yeah.
But as long as there's something else that you want to do, then that'll always be pushing you on to keep trying to do more.
Yeah.
I guess that's the thing. I mean, yeah, I guess, look, in one sense, the ultimate goal is to sort of, I guess, be really recognised as a writer and a comedian.
Yep.
On a really large scale. And to be able, pretty much, I guess, to be able to do what I want artistically. You know, you reach the point where it's like, I'm comfortable, I'm recognised, and I'm successful enough that the projects I do from now on are going to be purely exactly what I want to do.
Yeah, and that's like when you see those movies that go for 4 hours, you know that director got to do whatever the hell they wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess, yeah, you could say the ultimate goal is to be in a place where I can be incredibly self-indulgent.
And isn't that everyone's dream and goal as well?
I think so, even outside the arts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ben, thank you so much for chatting with me. It's really interesting. I enjoy reading a lot of your stuff online and getting into Twitter debates, and we'll continue to do so.
Thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for having me.